What if mental health treatment could become more personalized, more precise, and less dependent on medication? In today's episode, we explore a rapidly growing area of brain science that is changing how we think about depression, anxiety, insomnia, OCD, and even cognitive decline. My guest today is Dr. Eli Aleja, an ABPN board-certified neurologist and founder of NeuroSpa Brain Rejuvenation Center, where he uses technologies like TMS to help patients whose symptoms were once considered difficult or even untreatable. From brain mapping to individualized neuromodulation, this conversation is about hope, neuroscience, and the future of brain health. I'm your host, Dr. Yi Shan. Let's dive deep into sleep. Hello, Dr. Alahi. Welcome to Deep Into Sleep podcast.
Hello there, Shi. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm very glad to have you today talk about some new technologies in your field of clinical work. And I know you use TMS and many other technologies to help treating clients, patients with different conditions. Can you please share with our audience what are some new technologies you've been using and find very useful in your field?
This is a very big topic. It's a monumental paradigm shift in the field of neurology and neurosciences. And the shift is to try to actually cure or definitively treat some disorders without just giving a medication. And over the last several decades, there has been a tremendous amount of research with the use of brain stimulation. You may have heard of or been exposed to one called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, but it's a powerful method by which you can stimulate specific targeted regions of the brain and, in fact, treat conditions that are not very well cured or treated with the standard medications. Namely, for example, depression that's hard to treat with medications, anxiety, Alzheimer's, memory disorders, ADD, and in fact, insomnia, which is, I know, close to your heart with respect to your channel.
Yes, that's great to know. There are different methods. I'm a psychologist, so I treat a lot of depression, anxiety, in addition to insomnia. Sometimes we do run into the problem that psychotherapy does not really work well, and even medication does not work well. So I want to understand, what are the criteria for your team to decide when is the good timing for a patient to consider this kind of new technology for treatment?
Well, really the litmus test is if a patient is feeling frustrated with the results of the treatment that's offered by the standard methods, primarily with medications, that's when we can really become another option for those patients. For example, you said you treat depression. Depression is actually one of the most commonly treated diagnoses with TMS. The fact that it is FDA approved, it was FDA approved for the use of TMS for depression in 2008. But the patient who's, you know, gone to psychiatrist after psychiatrist, tried, you know, two or three different medications and still suffering, that's kind of, as we say, the lowest hanging fruit, meaning that those patients continue to suffer, and they have recurrent hospitalizations even. And in fact, TMS has been shown to be far more effective in that population than adding yet another medication. So that's number one. Number two, when you go to doctor and doctor, and what they're telling you is that, you know, this is hopeless, there's nothing we can do. Well, there is, in fact, a lot that we can do with the use of neuromodulation strategies with TMS. So that's the easiest way to answer that question. If someone is feeling super frustrated with respect to the fact that either the doctors are not offering any further treatments other than medications, or if they still confused as to what's going on, the technology with respect to EEG diagnostics can be helpful for that part. So now we're switching to, you know, the diagnostic part of all this. So yes, basically, if you're frustrated with the current healthcare system and medication-dominated treatment options, that's where TMS can be helpful.
So sounds like from standard clinical intake type of evaluation, patients can also use EEG and other technology to help with diagnose and use TMS as a treatment option.
That's right. So diagnosis is of course, the fundamental first step before you can offer treatment. You got to know what's going on, what the diagnosis is, what the problem is first before you can fix it. And as you know, the entire field of psychiatry and mental health, even in neurology, often rests on how the patient explains or expresses their symptoms. Yes, there are some exam findings that we can discuss in psychiatry. There's what we perceive as their mood, their affect. However, there is, until now, no imaging, no objective imaging, or even, like, for example, a blood test that can help you with the diagnosis. And quantitative EEG, what we call Loretta imaging, low resolution tomography, can actually help with that. And I've seen hundreds and hundreds of examples where the quantitative EEG helped us understand the diagnosis far better than, you know, the patient's subjective reporting. The patient, remember, is placed under this big, huge expectation that they know exactly what's going on in their brain. They know exactly how to articulate it, and the psychiatrist or the observer will understand exactly what's going on in their head. That's a lot of expectations. I mean, it's like the chances of that happening are close to zero. So especially with patients with mood disorders, one of their fundamental problems is they cannot articulate exactly what they're feeling. And that by itself produces a big challenge in the mental health care field, because you know, doctors are only left to assume, and you know what happens with assume? It makes an ass out of you and me, right? So we got to make sure we have some better imaging techniques, and quantitative EEG comes the closest to that. And it's also important to recognize functional MRI, not just a regular MRI, but functional MRI can be helpful. Unfortunately, that's still in the research phase in many worlds.
Yeah, I think you raise a very important question, how accurate the diagnosis could be and how much more we need to know from a patient to really formulate a treatment plan. I think by now, some audience possibly are curious, what is this technology, TMS? I think providers in the field, we possibly know about that, and I read research about it. I have colleagues prescribe that in medical centers. But maybe a lot of people are not familiar with this technology at all or never heard of that.
Well, this technology is actually very ancient. The Greeks, the Persians, the ancient civilizations used certain types of marine life that produce electricity to treat many conditions. And so there is historical basis for this. But to put it simply, we use electromagnetic fields to stimulate, meaning create electrical impulses in the brain. So just backing up a little bit, the brain is composed of billions and billions of little cells called neurons that produce little electrical shocks. In fact, that's how your heart works, right? Your heart has these electrical cells that trigger the voltage to produce muscle contraction of the heart. Except in the brain, there's no muscle. You're trying to produce these electrical circuits that go on or off, just like a computer is zeros and ones. Same kind of thing in the brain. Certain groups of neurons turn on, certain turn off. And to operate or to produce a particular operation, you need this code of certain neurons going on, certain neurons going off. Now imagine if the battery is dead, there's no electricity, right? There's no electrical current going through those circuits. So what we are doing is basically empowering those neurons to be able to perform more efficiently by giving them electromagnetic impulses. And so what it does, it down to the cellular level, is increases electrical potential. It increases neurotransmitter secretion. I think most people are familiar with the word neurotransmitter. These are chemicals that are released from the neurons after you stimulate them, and they're vital for the normal operation of the brain. So it increases neurotransmitter secretion, it increases blood flow. And what it is basically electromagnetic field. So anytime you run electric current through a wire, you produce a magnetic field, basic high school physics. And that electrical field produces a small electric current in anything next to it, as long as it has ions. An analogy of that is, you know how now there, you put your cell phone on these surfaces that can charge your cell phone? You're not plugging it in, you're just placing it on a mat. All that is electromagnetic field that creates a charge in your phone. So we do the same thing, except we direct that charge towards a selected region of the brain. For example, we select dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. I don't think, is this on viewable or is this on YouTube?
Yeah, this will be on YouTube.
This part of the brain, I'm pointing to the area in the prefrontal cortex. You basically increase the electrical discharge from this region, and that can have profound effects in the brain. Another analogy that some people are familiar with is the old style electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT. They basically used to put paddles of electricity on a person's head after they anesthetize, so they sedate the patient so they don't feel anything. And then they trigger a whole brain electric current that triggers a seizure in the brain. And these people come out of depression like a switch was turned on, except that causes memory problems. It leads to, you know, invasive procedures where you have to go under anesthesia. And so it's not favorable. We can accomplish the same thing with the patient wide awake, watching television during the procedure, using electromagnetic pulse directed to a specific region of the brain. Mm. So the electromagnetic field bypasses bone, bypasses skin, bypasses hair. You don't need direct electricity. You use electromagnetic field to, in fact, stimulate the brain in the same, with the same effectiveness as if you had full-blown electricity. So that's kind of what it is. Long answer to your question.
Yeah, that sounds much safer than the old like style treatment we always watch in the movie, yes, right? You directly use electricity to shock people.
Yeah, and by the way, ECT is still used today, and it can have benefits for a lot of people. However, it's being more and more progressively supplanted with the use of TMS, but it still has its role in certain conditions like schizophrenia, psychosis, severe depression that's not treatable with any of these methods. We still have those cases, but more and more patients are, and doctors and clinics are moving towards non-invasive brain modulation with TMS rather than sending them to a much more invasive EEG electroconvulsive shock treatment.
Yeah, when I worked in inpatient hospitals before, for severe psychotic symptoms,
yes.
I do see patients still be sent to hospitals for ECT treatment. But when I work in outpatient setting, nowadays I think TMS become more and more popular as a safer option. So how safe it is? Some audience may be very concerned if you put some kind of device over your head and you have to do that multiple times. Is that safe?
So this is extremely important. The first rule of medicine, when you become a doctor, you raise your hand, you take the Hippocratic Oath. And in that oath, it says, first do no harm. And unfortunately, a lot of doctors, a lot of hospital systems are forgetting that role. A lot of medication drug companies are forgetting that Hippocratic Oath. So this is the best part about TMS. It is extremely safe. It is probably the safest treatment available in any field. The risks of TMS are practically speaking zero. So it doesn't cause any harm whatsoever. However, in the literature, in the decades and decades of research and trials, a few patients have experienced seizures. And statistically, that's the risk is 1 in 30,000. For example, commonly used medications like Wellbutrin, Bupropion, Zoloft, Sertraline have a higher risk of seizures than TMS, just to put those into reference. So that's a very low risk. And usually, even if you have a seizure, once you stop the TMS, it goes away. And a lot of patients come back and keep going because the protocol just needs to be modified a bit. So that's really the only risk. There are some mild headaches some people experience. Some people experience muscle contractions around the face during the stimulation, all of which is quite tolerable. And again, a vast majority don't have any issues with it. About maybe two or three people around the entire world have reported to have retinal tears, which is, you know, two or three people out of millions of people is negligible. Some in the old literature, they used to use these very loud TMS machines. And some people experienced hearing issues or tinnitus, but the newer generation machines don't nearly have the same level of noise. And so it's very much, much more quiet. In fact, we treat tinnitus with TMS.
Really?
And just to put things into perspective, before I started doing TMS on patients, I did it on my own family members, my father, my mother, my wife, my nine-year-old niece. And the reason was because I knew it was safe and they all did well. And so it's extremely safe. From a safety perspective, it's one of the most safe treatments, medical treatments available.
It's interesting. Sounds like TMS can treat much more clinical disorders or symptoms than what I used to know. I used to give a lecture to the Tinnitus Association. We use CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, to talk about how you can manage your symptom psychologically to tolerate it better,
right,
to feel less frustrated. But glad to know TMS can treat that as well. And you mentioned, you told me TMS can be used to treat insomnia as well. And insomnia is another,
yes,
psychological condition. And we normally use behavioral sleep medicine to treat that.
That's
so I'm
correct.
Curious about how TMS can be used in the field of insomnia treatment.
There has been published articles, published clinical trials. This was published in 2013. Efficacy of repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation in the treatment of patients with chronic primary insomnia.
Oh.
And this was published in Cellular Biochemistry and Biophysics. And so there was a clinical trial that was done, and this is just one example. And just to run to the conclusions, the study showed that while total sleep time was shorter and sleep efficacy was lower in our TMS treatment group, stage three and REM sleep phases were more favorable in this group compared with both control groups. In addition, RTMS more favorably decreased serum cortisol, TSH, T3, T4, ATCH levels, and the PSQI, which is, for those viewers, Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, is a measure of sleep. I'm sure you're familiar with it,
mm-hmm,
was lower in the RTMS group. In conclusion, RTMS provides a new, safe, effective means of physical therapy for chronic insomnia. So this is just one of many papers that have been published in this context.
Mm-hmm.
So the way TMS can be used is it can be used to either excite neurons or inhibit neurons, meaning you can increase the activity, or if you typically use 1 hertz or lower frequency of stimulation, you can actually reduce excessive neural activity down to normal. So it has both roles depending on how you use it, which is also important because there's a lot of people that are just doing TMS, but they don't know what they're doing. What protocol? There's so many parameters. What protocol do you use? What hertz do you use? What targets of the brain do you use? For example, there have been studies that basically show the use of TMS in patients who have both anxiety and insomnia. And I can show you papers in that where they showed that stimulating the parietal area of the brain has been shown to be very helpful. Patients often are confronted with a lot of people out there that are selling snake oil, herbs, and this and that
right,
don't work. This is very, very scientific. So here's a study. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes.
It says this was published in Brain Stimulation, which is a peer-reviewed, very respected journal in 2018. So like 9 years ago, and there's been plenty more studies now. Repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation of the right parietal cortex for comorbid generalized anxiety and insomnia, a randomized double-blind sham control study. You can't get any higher than this level of evidence. And just to, again, conclusion, the present study is the first randomized sham control study to assess the effectiveness of low-frequency RTMS to the right parietal lobe in patients with comorbid generalized anxiety, insomnia, our results suggest that 1 hertz low frequency TMS administered over the parietal cortex is effective for both anxiety and insomnia in patients with comorbid generalized anxiety and insomnia. And of course, we can go through the details of the paper regarding how it was done and the changes that were seen on these rating scales, the secondary outcomes, all of that stuff. We can share that, but this is not the platform for it. However, mm-hmm. just looking at the PSQI, which is how you measure insomnia, and the lower score is better. There was a 44% improvement, and even 1 month follow-up, there was a 43% improvement. And as you know, Dr. Shi, this is impossible to achieve with many of our conventional methods. Or if it is, you have to get on a series of medications, all of which can be highly addictive and produce tolerance.
Yeah, so the TMS method, the result is pretty good. I feel like the result is possibly only behaviorally, like the CBTI, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia, can reach similar level of improvement. Of course, that's also a several week long process. And you have to also, patients have to be willing to do a lot of cognitive work, behavior change, to adapt to that. Sounds like could be a good combination, because even in the insomnia field, CBTI is already first-line treatment, evidence-based, but even that, we still notice some patients, they drop out of the treatment halfway through, they don't have patience, they don't want to continue the treatment for whatever reason, or they find it's too hard for them to do. For people like that, I could imagine offering this optional TMS as another method would bring hope to a lot of patients.
Exactly. So as you just said, yes, there are treatments such as CBTI. However, that has limitations. And what if you combine CBTI with these powerful methods like TMS? This could be a huge synergistic effect. And in fact, in almost all our patients, we recommend that if they haven't already done CBTI, they should either do it before, during, or after they're done with their TMS treatments. So imagine what we can achieve with the combination. And each of these has limitations. With CBTI, it requires regular show to your appointments. And a lot of times TMS is not always available around the world. So that's another limitation. We have patients coming in from all over the world sometimes. So those are, each has its own limitations, but by far much more effective than, taking medications.
That's also good to know that TMS method can be very effective to different disorders, symptoms. Based on the research you quoted, seems like it is a great treatment option for insomnia. So to depression and mood disorders, how effective it is?
If done right, meaning if you try to tailor the protocol to that person's brain, if you use MRI navigation, because every person's brain is like a fingerprint, the folds of the brain, the size of the brain, the cell size is quite variable from person to person. If you understand the anatomy for each person, if you use EEG biomarkers like we do, it's greater than 90%. Now, if you don't do any of that, just do the same protocol for everybody, it's about 40% effective. Still better than medicines. Medicines are 20% effective. So 20, 40, 90. To achieve 90%, we use a person's brain MRI, we use their EEG to understand what parts of the brain are abnormal. We follow them, we use multiple targets, we modify the protocol throughout the course if necessary. And so you get 90%+. There was this large study done at Stanford a few years ago where they got 90%+ because they used MRI navigation. The Stanford Accelerated Intelligent Neuromodulation Therapy, 90.5% remission.
That's
show me a treatment in the world of medicine, especially in psychiatry, that has that kind of an efficacy.
That's very hard. But the most important thing you mentioned here is we need to tailor the treatment to the patient. We need to make it individualized. That's something I always mention at the end of my podcast, that sleep is such an individualized thing. We have to listen to our body and tailor the treatment method to you. And I think it applies to any other field as well. And I did not know, before you tell me, I did not know our brain look like finger, like that's fingerprint. Right. It's different. So we need to really respect our individual difference and our that's uniqueness.
Right. Absolutely. So a lot of offices are just popping up that say, yeah, we do TMS. They have one tech, one machine in the corner. They don't know what they're doing. They use the same stimulation technique for everybody. It's not going to be very effective. We actually do a comprehensive consultation. We do an EEG evaluation. We pull their MRI anatomy. We find out the exact areas of the brain that are abnormal. We look at the literature as to what has worked before with other trials. We then use that to make an educated guess. And then we follow them every 10 or 20 sessions. We have another interview. We have another brain evaluation with their EEG. Are things going in the right direction as expected or not? And then we modify the target. It's very exhausting, but it produces 90%+.
Right. I think that's worth the procedure, right? How long is the treatment normally going to last for people?
So nowadays, that trial I just showed you, done at Stanford, basically did that in 1 week. So 10 sessions a day for 5 days or 50 sessions in 1 week. That's as fast as you can do it. Wow. But nowadays, patients can do, 2 days a week, 1 day a week, and try to get as many sessions in to up to 50 sessions. Each session is about 15 to 20 minutes. And so patients are really flexible to get this done in however way, shape, or form they want to do it, as long as there is less than a 2 week gap between sessions. And of course, we always recommend trying to get this done back to back, because when there is a larger gap between treatment sessions, the effectiveness does get impacted, and you have less effect as compared to doing it back to back as best you can.
How long each session is? How can you have so many sessions within a day?
Yeah, so each session is about 15 minutes, sometimes 10 minutes. The ones they used at Stanford study was 10 minutes. Actually 9.9½ minutes to be exact. And then you have to have a 30 or 45 minute break, and then you do it again. So every hour, basically, you're doing one session. So patients arrive at 8 a.m., they do a 15 minute session, they get a 45 minute break, another session. And during the break, they can do anything they want. They can go for a walk, they can watch TV, they can sleep, they can work on their computer. Even during the sessions, they can watch TV. It's not invasive. So it's very, very non-invasive. So yeah, that's how they can do multiple sessions in a day.
Great to know. And what other common problems have you noticed that TMS is extremely effective and be used for in the field?
Memory disorders, Alzheimer's, mild cognitive impairment, precursors to Alzheimer's. We have seen, I don't know if you know, that now there's blood tests to determine your risk of Alzheimer's. They look at this protein called amyloid in the serum, in the blood. You can measure that and then measure it again after the treatment. And almost everybody that we've treated, they show improvement in their blood test biomarkers. So in terms of memory disorders, it's becoming much more better known that it's far more effective than the average medication. The medications for dementia or Alzheimer's are extremely ineffective and very harmful in many ways. So TMS can be extremely helpful. I can pull up the papers for that as well.
Yeah, while you are doing that, I'm curious. I used to work in a neuropsychological clinic to do psychological testing for patients from all kinds of clinical issues, including dementia or early stage of dementia. Back then, what I learned was dementia, this kind of memory loss, is irreversible. And with appropriate treatment early on, you possibly can keep the quality of life as long as possible, but once you are diagnosed, basically your lifespan gonna be shortened, and you cannot bring someone back fully. So I'm not sure right now where the technology is around that with TMS.
Well, let me answer that question after I just briefly discussed this paper. 2015, it was published. So about 10 years ago, imagine all the data that we've gathered now. Mm-hmm. UCLA is doing a trial at the moment. Just show you the results, conclusion. The results suggest that RTMS, now they call it RTMS cough because some of these patients actually did some cognitive training as well, presents a useful adjuvant therapy with cholinesterase inhibitors, particularly during the mild stage of AD. The effect of RTMS cog was remarkable in the memory and language domains, which are severely affected by AD. So if I show you the graphs, so this is sham treatment, the hash marks, this is actual treatment. Wow. And they use what the pharmaceutical companies use to try to advertise their drugs. The ADAS cog is a measure of cognitive function. Mm-hmm. And the lower the number, the basically the better. Mm-hmm. And look at what happens after 6 weeks of treatment. That's just that. So again, this is, again, ADS cog, the 6 week actual treatment arm did much better. Even on the mini mental status exam, which is a very short, brief bedside test, you can see that the p-value was significant. Mm-hmm. 6 weeks, they scored 3 points better, 26 on average in comparison to 23. So, and that's just one trial that I'm showing you. There is hundreds and hundreds of trials that show the benefits of TMS. Randomized double-blind study. Again, this was actually done in here in the US. Again, the conclusion is there was an improvement in the average ADS score of 3.76 points after 6 weeks in the treatment compared to 0.47 in the placebo group. And this actually company, or these investigators also presented data to the FDA to get this FDA approved. And the FDA, for whatever reason, turned them down, saying that the cognitive therapy that they did alongside it kind of messed up the results. But the problem is when you do cognitive therapy alone, you don't get any kind of benefit. So that's already known, that's established. Otherwise we'd be doing that. So ADS cog, again, the p-values are significant. The treatment arm is in the dark blue. It's very clear that they did better. Anyhow, we could go on and on with multiple studies. Again, this is not the platform for it. However, that's what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And now going back to your question, these patients range in severity from mild to severe.
Right.
So they have different responses. We published a case report of a young lady, very early onset dementia in her 40s, which is very rare. It's called early onset, which is a rare condition. She improved with TMS, and we published that in Clinical Neurophysiology. But we have mild cases, severe cases. All of them improve, and we can actually push the time for institutionalization, meaning that the patient requires nursing home by several years at least. But we are not curing the disease. So it's not like patients go from having the disease to absolute no disease, but we are certainly far more effective than any medication out there in improving their memory, improving their ability to function for several years more at least. And they sometimes come back for maintenance treatments every once in a while. So it's far away better in terms of efficacy. And guess what? There's no medication you have to take every day. All those other treatments require a daily medication every day, each with its own series of side effects. I mean, I don't know what else is necessary to show. We have the randomized controls trials. We have the patient evidence. We have the safety. Guess why? Now you know why I'm here.
I think it's so important, even for me in the field, I only know limited. I heard good things about this treatment, but mostly what we know is it's effective in treating severe depression and some other mood disorder. Now I know it actually can be helpful in treating many other different challenges in life. I think, and with all this evidence behind it, it's so important for public, for everyone to be more aware of this. So I'm wondering, near the end of the show, for whoever are listening, our audience possibly have different backgrounds.
Yes.
What do you think, what is a message you want to send out to the public? What people should know or consider about this TMS treatment?
Three main points. Don't lose hope if you're suffering from a disorder that you're entangled with and the medications are not working. Number two, learn about TMS and don't just go to any TMS center because you'd be disappointed. Make sure they do MRI navigation, make sure they're actually using some objective way of following your success. And three, make the commitment to do it. You're not gonna help yourself by just looking, you know, waiting. Act now. You're not gonna get younger. Time is not gonna go backwards. Act now before these disorders entangle more of your life and take away more of your life. Every second that you live with a disease has consequences beyond your reach. It's affecting your social life, your health, your family, your friends, which then has compounding effects throughout your life. The earlier you treat it, the faster your life turns around. I have seen patients who went from, I had one of my early patients was a severe OCD patient, young man, he had gone everywhere, institutions, academic centers. His first time he actually had relief was with our treatment. He was one that would wash his face with bleach. He couldn't park a car because he had obsessive compulsive symptoms about symmetry. And he had done everything you can think of, medications, five different medications, years of therapy. And now he is married with two beautiful young kids, toddler boys, has a successful family, and calls me almost every week to thank me. And it's been like 6 years ago. And so that's one example. Had he waited, it would have been far more consequential.
Very powerful messages. Yes. And one last question many people may want to ask. Is this treatment covered by insurance?
So first I'll tell you the simple answer is yes, but the difficult answer is no. Let me tell you what I mean. Yes, it's covered by insurance for only severe depression. Insurance does not want to help you. Insurance wants to make lots of money for their stockholders. So they will make it hard for you. You have to have tried three different medications. You have to show that you failed them. You have to have severe depression, not any of these other disorders like OCD, anxiety. And only then will they cover it. And then you have to do the one protocol that they allow. Hopefully it works for you. So we don't mess around with insurance. We don't wait for insurance to give us the green light. We do the proper treatment that's required for the patient, and we make the cost manageable for the patient, because at the end of the day, there was a study done at Australia and many other countries replicated that, where doing the treatment with TMS saves you thousands of dollars in actual cash money, but also in lost productivity in life. And they put a value on that. And I can share that study with you too on the screen if you like.
So you can just send it to me later, possibly. That's easier.
This is not something you want to be waiting around. Maybe you'll have the money someday. This is affecting your life. And don't wait for insurance. Yes, great. If insurance covers it, wonderful. But don't wait to do something because insurance denied it. Insurance is not in the business of helping you. Insurance only wants to reduce their costs and for you to never, ever use them.
Yeah.
That's insurance. We don't deal with insurance. We help patients submit claims, but we don't wait for insurance to tell us how to practice.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if anyone wants to look for your service and get your help, how can they find you?
Very simple. All you have to do is look up NeuroSpa Brain, or just type my name, Dr. Alahi. We're trying to open up other offices around the country, but there's only one NeuroSpa Brain Rejuvenation. I'm Dr. Alahi. And if we also have a YouTube channel, by the way, just NeuroSpa Brain. We have 80,000 subscribers. I share testimonials and I share educational information. You can look that up as well. However, there's only one, excuse me, Dr. Alahi, there's only one NeuroSpa Brain. So that's how they can find us.
Sure. I will put all the information down to the show notes. So everyone, whoever listening, watching, they should be able to have the links to your website, to your YouTube channel easily. Thank you very much, Dr. Alahi, for sharing all this knowledge with us and help us know how wonderful this treatment is and what's the correct way to do it.
And thank you, Shi, because what you're doing is incredible and it's very helpful. And all the effort that you're putting in to provide this information to the world is extremely valuable. Thank you so much for your efforts.
Yeah, thank you. One of the most important messages from today's conversation is this. The brain is far more adaptable than many people realize. Whether someone is struggling with depression, insomnia, OCD, or cognitive decline, the future of treatment may not be about finding one universal solution, but about understanding each individual brain more deeply. As always, new technologies should be approached thoughtfully, critically, and with good scientific guidance. But conversations like this remind us that there is still room for innovation, healing, and hope. Thank you for going deep into sleep with me. I'm Dr. Ishan, wishing you a restful night ahead.
Sleep is an individual thing. We all sleep differently, and there is so much we can do to improve sleep quality. Keep hope and carry on. This podcast is for general informational purpose only and does not include the practice of medicine or other health professional services. Usage of the information we share is at the listener's own risk, and our content does not intend to be a substitute for any medical and professional services, diagnoses, and treatment. Please seek professional health services as needed.